Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
This episode is brought to you by Kinnec. Kinnec helps small businesses connect with suppliers and get customized quotes for free. Learn more at kinnec.com/heritage.
I'm Greg Blaze, host of Cutting the Curd. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good evening and welcome to Fun Men About It on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
I'm Mary Izette.
I'm Chris Kuzmi.
And we're your co-hosts through this weekly journey of all things fermented.
Archived on Stitcher, iTunes, and right here on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. It has been a very, very fun week. We had a really, there was a really great event over the weekend that we're going to get to in a second. But first, let's talk about the future. Coming up, we have Beer for Beasts on October 15th. It is basically an event. It's the fifth year in the running. 6 Point teams up with collaborators to celebrate dozens of unique beers served at Beer for Beasts in Brooklyn, New York. These small batch one-time offerings are formulated exclusively for the Beer for Beasts event. I brewed a beer with them with my partner Dave Sharfstein of Fifth Hammer Brewing Company, and we're really excited to serve it there. You can go to beerforbeasts.com to buy tickets and find out more information. All the proceeds from this go to benefit the Humane Society of New York, and it is a really good event, a really interesting event, a really inspiring event, and for us representing ourselves as Fifth Hammer, even though we're not open as a brewery, we're excited to do that. Because in today's life of Fifth Hammer, I went to the building department this morning, and we're still sorting that out, so we haven't even been able to start building this thing. We've got this location. I moved a piano in there the other day, so I sit there with my lonesome playing piano and I'm waiting for the DOP. It's a very exciting but miserable existence. We'll get there soon. It's a very
Welcome to the life of a brewery owner.
Oh, God. It's, oh, God. I just want to make the music, man. All right, anyway. yep. I am going to get a pink trombone for the house, too. So if anybody wants to come over and play some trombone, anyway. Versus is an event put on by the Brewman. Also on the 15th, Saturday, October 15th at 1 p.m. If you are really looking to have a great time that day, you could go to Versus in the afternoon and then hit Beer for Beasts in the evening. Versus is going to take place at the Well. Brewmanaries are a homebrew club in the neighborhood. They're pretty there. I think they're right now they're the most active New York City homebrew club.
Well, the largest.
Largest. That's largest what, I think that's what I mean. The largest attendance, most active members. But they're... They describe this event as the Brewmanaries are putting up their best versions of beers in an epic competition of styles. Beers from different sides of the world will compete for the ultimate bragging rights and perhaps even settle long-standing feuds. Join them for unlimited examples of over 24 different styles of beer for the ultimate beer event. You can go to brewmanaries.com/versus. Tickets are $30 early, pre-order $35, at $40 at the door. In Bushwick. And then just before that, Kelly Taylor and I, as I said, we both don't have homes that we're brewing at yet. On October 13th, we're getting an old school New York City trolley and rolling around some of the newer breweries here in New York. So we're going to start actually at Folk's Beer. We're going to go to Strong Root Brewing Company, Kings County Brewers Collective, and Interborough. And we're Spirits and Ales, and we're stoked to do that. You can go to nycraftbeerguide.com/events, and you can find information on that. And that is basically $40 for the trolley. You get a sample of each one of those, meet all the brewers, 6 p.m. to 10 p.m. on Thursday the 13th.
This weekend is GABF, the Great American Beer Festival in Denver, Colorado. It is the 6th through the 8th, so you know if you're going because it sold out pretty much immediately, I believe, as usual. Chris and I are missing it for the first time in a few years. We're kind of sad, but...
But happy anniversary.
Yeah, that's right. Engagement anniversary. Anyway, if you are going, especially for the first time, we have two episodes to help guide you. Episode 90 and episode 132. Our good friend Chris O'Leary from Brew York, New York, stopped in and chatted with us. He's been to, I don't know, a lot of GABFs, and he has a really good strategy. And it can be overwhelming. So have fun if you're going and you know, drink some tasty beers. Also this weekend, if you're in New York City and attending New York Comic Con, which is the second largest event in New York City behind the auto show.
Is it really?
Yeah, 170,000 people attended last year. So if you're there on Sunday, I will be working at the Brooklyn Brewery booth. So Brooklyn Brewery created the official beer of Comic-Con, Brooklyn Defender IPA. I have actually not, I don't think I've tasted this year's. They change it up every year. I haven't tasted this year's yet, but I'm looking forward to doing so. So if you are at New York Comic-Con this Sunday, please come by the Brooklyn Brewery booth and say hi. I think that's it. That's
Is that
all
it?
I got. Yeah.
Oh man. Okay. So the home brewsicians, you know, we live to play. We charge $2,000 per hour per man or free beer. Usually people give us free beer. I'm not sure why, but we are not complaining. We love really as long as it's good beer. So we played at Poor Mania 3, an annual fundraiser put on by Poor Standards, Staten Island's homebrew club. And one of the cool things they have coming up for their in-club competition is a competition or in-club activity. They are having a competition of beers brewed with cereal, and a couple of the guys had sneak peeks of these, and I was so overwhelmed I had to find out you know, what some of these people were thinking. Without further ado, I present cereal brewers from Poor Standards Homebrew Club on Staten Island.
This is Paul Camargo. We're at the VP from Poor Standards Brew Club. We're at Flagship Brewery. We're at Poor Mania. We're drinking all kinds of good stuff, but we have a special cereal challenge with the club that I came up with. Everybody had to pull out of a hat a different cereal. I got Corn Pop, so I made a Corn Pop malt liquor called 40 Ounces to Freedom. So it's basically a adjunct beer. So it's corn, flake maize, and corn pop. With 6-row and 2-row for the malt, and it's just basically a 40-ounce malt liquor. So drink up. I wanted to put it in 40s, but we're serving it out of a keg today.
Hey, how's it going? Eric Blaine, New Jersey member of Poor Standards. Go figure that one out. I'm here at Poor Mania 2016 today, pouring my two Grape Nuts beers. This was a 10-gallon split batch that I brewed. Single mash, single boil with 2 pounds of Grape Nuts in a 10-gallon batch, along with Munich Pilsner, some Kara Munich, and a little bit of Abbey and C180 malt. And after boil, I split this batch, and half of it got 3470 lager yeast, and I did a fast lager with that, and that became the Vienna Grape Nuts lager. The other half got a pound of dark Belgian candy syrup, and that became a Belgian double. The idea of both beers was to play off of the malty, bready notes of the Grape Nuts. So the Vienna lager, a little bit caramelly, a little bit sweet, but hopped like a Vienna lager. Vienna lager is the hoppiest of the standard strength German lagers, so the intent was to have those hops help balance out the bready sweetness. Good beer. Still needs a little bit of time to mellow out, but I think it's drinking pretty well today. The Belgian doubles are drinking quite a bit different. That's a Belgian Ardennes yeast that was fermented, started at 66, made its way to 75. It's got a mix of dark fruit notes, bready malty flavor, and some spicy and clove phenolics from that Belgian yeast. Also drinking pretty well today, but also probably needs some time. So good beers, hoping we have some left, and that's it.
Hey guys, my name is Dan Cavanaugh. I'm a New York City fireman, also
home brewer with Poor Standards, which is a beautiful club that does a lot of charity work here on Staten Island. And we had yet another successful charity event, which is Poor Mania. This is our third annual. And this year I decided to make a brown ale. We were given a challenge to come up with a cereal-based beer. And so I was given the, I was assigned Cocoa Puffs, which, you know, isn't too bad of a beer to be assigned. And I decided to go with a brown ale, which, you know, was kind of predictable, but I, you know, wanted to play it a little safe. And it was a 5-gallon batch. It was a 13.5 pound total grain bill. And I think it came out great. It was, it's very opaque beer. And it finished up around 6.5, maybe actually be a little bit higher, because I wasn't really sure how the Cocoa Puffs were going to affect, you know, the outcome of the beer. So I actually pulled back a little of the brown sugar that I was adding into the mash. And regardless, it finished up pretty clean, and very good drinking beer. Actually, in fact, all the beers that are here, there's approximately about 30 beers that me and my friends all brewed up, you know, out of our own pockets, for all for a great cause. And very excited. Look out for Brew for Autism, which is coming up in late January, early February. That's always another sold out event that we have. Again, all for charity. And that's it. Poor Standards, rock on.
I'm here with Patrick Wade of Poor Standards. All the other interviews you've heard thus far have been kind of not interviews because it was quiet. It was not very quiet in there, and it was easy to do that. But Patrick Wade is it's kind of interesting, this place. We are in between Joe and Pro. So Patrick Wade, dude, first of all, you've been making killer beers for a long time. Mary and I are big fans, and thank you for doing what you do and making life taste better. Tell us about your cereal beer first, and then let's talk about future plans.
Okay. I didn't make, well, me and Rachel, it's Rachel's cereal beer. So Rachel, we did a, at the club.
Who is Rachel?
Rachel's my wife.
Oh, yeah, she's so sweet.
She is. we did a club challenge, kind of a, you know, a lot of it, we've done yeast experiments and grain experiments and all that, and hops and all that. That's all great. We love that. But we thought we'd sometimes do fun stuff. So one of the, you know, previous challenge we did was we took the Denny Kahn, Drew Beecham book, and everyone just picked a recipe and kind of went with it and did what they could with it. This one, we, I don't know what, somehow we got in our brains to use cereal, like breakfast cereals. So we had a club meeting, everyone picked out of a hat, and if you didn't like your cereal, you could go back and pull again. So, and then you could trade as well. So, you know, people like, I was dreading Apple Jacks. That was probably the most worst thing of all time. But our buddy, one of the club members, Terrence, got it, and he said, I'm sticking with it. Rachel got Cookie Crisp. So when we were talking, we were talking about what we wanted to do and what she wanted to do, and she was like, I want to make a stout. So we put together, the two of us put together a milk stout recipe. We used a pound of Cookie Crisp went into the beer. Some in the mash, some in the boil. And I think it came out pretty well. I think it was really murky and disgusting. The first maybe like gallon out of that keg was kind of gross, but it's really delicious now. I really am very happy with how it came out. I got Cinnamon Toast Crunch. And I made it a few weeks ago, maybe 2 weeks ago, and it's just not ready. So I didn't have it in time, but...
But this one is delicious, and it is pouring lovely, and yes. There weren't any you say it was murky and disgusting, but let's talk about it flavor profile-wise. Yeah. Was that getting in the way of the flavor, and what would you do different if you were on the same timeline? Or would you? Is it like pectin, or is it like it's just haze?
I think
flour?
It is. I think it's
not even pectin, but...
It's whatever unnatural stuff's going in that cereal. I think that's what was going on in that beer for a while, because it all kind of... sunk down to the bottom of the keg, sludge. And
right.
It was Cookie Crisp sludge.
We're talking protein chains that did not drop out.
Exactly. So,
did you use findings on it?
We did.
And you did.
We did. Yeah. It was The fermenter looked funky. The keg, like I said, the keg looked funky, but it's good now. I'm very happy with how it came out.
It is freaking delicious.
Yeah.
Among my favorite that are here.
Yeah.
But they're all really good, and they're all, this as an experiment is really great. I mean, beer is cereal that could convert it to other things, and treating it all.
Absolutely,
it's totally fine.
I love doing the experiments that help us learn, but, you know, homebrewing is also supposed to be fun. So it's good to do one of these fun challenges every once in a while as well. So.
Absolutely.
I'm just happy everyone made good beers with it. I was kind of worried, because when I saw Rachel's, I was like, shit. This is going to be a problem. We're all going to have terrible beers.
Speaking of challenging, it's hard to open a brewery. What are you doing right now?
We're in the process of opening a brewery. We have ordered the equipment. We have a space. We're supposed to be signing the lease and doing all that stuff and filing for licensing, and that's all creeping up very fast. And it's scary, exciting, all of that. You know, it's something we're all looking forward to.
Is there a name? How do we follow it? Is there a story behind it currently that you'd like to discuss?
Sure.
We'll dedicate a whole episode later.
Yeah,
of course. But let's get some preview action.
It's Killsborough Brewing Company. The name is based on one of the partners, Sean Torres. Very delicious. Makes very delicious beer. Sean is also very delicious.
My ears are buzzed. But he made a cereal beer too, so we'll be talking to him.
He did. He made a granola beer. So he took his usual ESB recipe and added granola to it. It's a bit young. He made it 10 days ago. And for 10 days old, I think it tastes pretty damn good.
Right on. This is the first beer that will have two perspectives on it. I'll talk to Sean in a second.
Yeah.
But okay, so Killsborough.
That's
awesome. We've been talking to Sean for a while.
So Killsborough was, he came up with the name. It's, Staten Island was the German brewers from way back when. They used the fresh kill water to make their beers. So that's where the name comes from. We're a borough of kills. We're going to be doing very small batches. I think our system is going to be 5 to 10 barrels. And we're going to be doing a lot of different beers, probably 30 to 40 beers probably the first year, different beers.
Yeah, it's awesome.
So we're still getting recipes together. We're ready to open with, we have our beers that are probably ready to open with, but we're still working on some things that we think would be good for the New York City beer culture.
It's awesome. So my name is Terrence O'Brien, a member of Four Standards. Max Early, one of the officers. I'm a secretary in the club. And so we did this challenge, this cereal challenge, basically just threw a bunch of cereal names in a hat, pulled them out randomly, and actually in the lead up to this experiment, we kept saying that we feel really bad for whoever draws Apple Jacks, that it had to be the worst one you could get. And of course, I reached into the hat and pulled out Apple Jacks. I was offered the opportunity to throw it back in and pick something else, and I refused. I took it as like a personal challenge that I had to do this. I had to make a drinkable beer with Apple Jacks. And so I started thinking about it a lot. I knew I couldn't do anything crazy bitter. I couldn't do an IPA. It probably wouldn't really work. But I didn't want to go the straight, heavy, stout approach that a lot of the chocolate beers were probably going to end up going. So I made a stout, and really went with a heavy body. There's like a pound of lactose, and I want to say a pound and a half of oatmeal in the mash to really get that like thick, creamy body going. And didn't want to carb it too much so that you still get a lot of that mouthfeel. It just kind of lingers around. And I also took the cereal and decided that rather than put it in the mash and try and pull out the fermentable sugars, I would end up treating it like a hop. So I looked for hops that would help play up the fruitiness and some of the spiciness of the Apple Jacks, and I landed on Calypso, which has like this green apple, kind of light peppery overtones to it. Didn't use any bittering hops, did it all aroma and flavor hops, so I think it was a half ounce at 15 minutes and a half ounce at 1 minute, and then I used the Apple Jacks at flame out, just a whole box. I want to say it was about a pound. I put it in a bag like I was doing brew in a bag and steeped it in the pot at the end like a tea bag, let it sit there for about 5 minutes, and then pulled it out and started chilling it. And honestly, the body's there, everything I wanted. I do kind of, it's only 4%, so it's super sessionable. I didn't want it to be anything crazy again. Wanted something that you could drink relatively easy. And it came out, honestly, surprisingly good. I wish the Apple Jacks came out a little bit more at the end of the day. Maybe I would have added a little bit more at flame out to try and really get some of that cinnamon flavor, some of that apple pie spice that's really like the overwhelming flavor of Apple Jacks. It's a little bit more fruity than spicy, I think, at the end of the day. But for the most part, I'm kind of happy with it. I think more Apple Jacks would have helped. The only other thing that I was a little bit disappointed in is the color. I was really trying to get that like orange, red Applejack color out of it. I knew I wasn't going to be able to get that really iridescent, unnatural color, but it's a little more yellow than orange, so I'd have to mess with the grain bill, I think, a little bit to really get that orange color out of it. But, you know, honestly, at the end of the day, pretty happy with how it turned out.
Kinect helps small businesses connect with suppliers online and get customized quotes for free. From research to purchase, we've helped thousands of craft producers find the best prices and suppliers for their business. Browse research, purchasing guides, or equipment and supplier reviews. Request and compare quotes from multiple suppliers in one place. Store your conversations online and purchase with confidence. Kinect is here to help you manage purchasing the easy way. Supplier? Kinect can help you connect with customers at the push of a button. It's the perfect solution, whether you're looking to scale or get a new product off the ground. See how our marketplace can help your business grow today. Buy or sell smarter on Kinect. It's purchasing made painless. To learn more, visit us at kinect.com/heritage. That's kinnek.com/heritage.
At Poor Standard annual fundraiser, Poor Mania 3, which is a fundraiser for the club and also to get things prepped for the annual big fundraiser, Brew for Autism. This whole club, Poor Standards, was started by our friend Sean Torres, who we are lucky enough to be with right now. And we're going to talk to Sean Torres. First of all, tell us about Poor Standards.
Sure. The club was founded in 2012 by myself and Phil Gardner. We looked around. There were a few clubs that were you know, either casual or on their way out, you know, members moving. And we wanted to, you know, create something on Staten Island for the homebrewers here that we knew, brewed beer, but didn't have a community supporting it. So we started meeting in January of 2012, monthly. And, you know, we've since grown to about 40 members. And, and since then we've put on events like Brew for Autism, Poor Mania, participated in Brunity events, and so on and so forth. So we'd like to think we're the one and only homebrew club, premier homebrew club on Staten Island. So
you speak of Brunity, and you are also, by trade, you are a very talented graphic artist and came up with the logo for Brunity, and so thank you for that.
It's freaking awesome.
I love your work. I'm a fan.
Thank you.
You've also been doing some work for a brewery called Killsboro, which is pretty cool, and we'll talk about that in a second. But first, let's talk about the Cereal Challenges, which is the theme of this segment of this show.
Yes.
Currently. So your club, you do random experiments. You've built a great community. Your website also has a forum unto itself,
yes,
where you talk about all sorts of different things. So the organization of Poor Standards, I have to commend as loudly as possible, because you guys do a really great job all around. But this challenge, what did you pick from the hat?
All right, so I got granola, simple granola, which I was initially a little disappointed with, but everyone on the club seemed excited. They're like, oh, granola's awesome. I mean, you know, it's oats and other grains that, you know, you sometimes use in brewing anyway. When I went to actually purchase the granola, I went with the honey oats and raisins, just so I can get a little bit more character out of it. I decided that cereal was a good base for something like an ESB. So I brewed my ESB, which I tweaked a little bit. Bitter and Esters actually has this new floor-malted Maris Otter, which I wanted to try. So threw that in, a few other traditional English ingredients, and threw the granola in the last 15 minutes of the mash. Wasn't really looking for conversion, just trying to pull whatever flavor I could out of it. And that was it. I threw about 2 boxes in, because we brewed 10 gallons on our pilot system. And it is a little hint of granola in the ESB.
Man, it's cool.
But it's definitely complimentary, and I'm happy with it. So
granola comes in a lot of different forms. What was your base granola, or what was your approach with that? When you think of granola, what emotes? And so there's a weird rule, not weird. I just learned of the rule from Patrick, actually, about
Patrick knows this, a lot of culinary stuff.
Well, no, I mean about the rule for this challenge.
Okay,
like everybody had to use at least 1 pound.
Yes.
of the cereal or like a full box of whatever cereal it was. But granola comes big, small, and comes in many different forms. There's no one standard granola.
Yes.
So what are the rules when it came to your challenge? You could have a granola just toasted oats, right?
Yes.
Or
yes.
Whatever. So what were your limitations or minimum?
I think in regards to the club and it being collaborative, though I was assigned the granola, obviously, you know, the I'm brewing it for the club to taste to see how the cereal interacts with the beer. So actually it was pretty transparent, and I spoke to, we have a Google Hangouts that we talk to pretty frequently on, and, you know, just throwing ideas out there, like, listen, I got simple granola, I don't think simple granola is enough, what if I use something like honey, toasted almonds, honey, and raisins, I think it was, something like that. Yeah. And obviously the one of the base grains in that is oats, which is, you know, which helps add a little bit of the body to the beer. But yeah, so we spoke a little bit about it, and they were all on board because they said, you know what, that's going to probably pull the most flavor. You know what I think of usually when I eat any cereal, whether, and listen, there's, like anything else, there's health foods, and then there are foods we think are healthy, right? And granola is kind of like that. You can get healthy granola, and then you can get granola that has, you know, M&M's in it and all this other, you know, not so great stuff for you. I was trying to shoot for the sweeter stuff. So in my head, what I remember growing up with granola is just any sugary, you know, granola that my parents would buy that knew the kids would love. So that's kind of like where I went with it.
Dig it. Yeah. Speaking of went with it, where are you going with your life? What the hell's going on? Tell me about Killsboro and,
sure.
and the path to this. You are insightful. You are critical. You pay attention to your palate. You're a fast learner. We are really excited about what's to come for Staten Island.
Yeah.
Are you born and raised Staten Island?
I was actually born in Brooklyn, Sunset Park. Moved out here when I was about 6 years old with the family, and been here ever since. I started brewing with Phil back in 2007. And, you know, it was something that kind of just evolved over time. And, you know, we always played with the idea of opening up a brewery. And through the club, we were able to meet a lot of great brewers, one being Patrick Waite. And this kind of, I mean, it'd be hard to pinpoint the process and what happened, but it evolved into this thing where the three of us were brewing together, and we had this idea for a brewery. And Vinny Lima from the Craft House, who's the owner of the Craft House, who's doing great things in regards to bringing craft beer to Staten Island, caught wind and was like, you know, I want to be a part of this. What can we do to get this going? And that was kind of our first step towards, you know what, it's time to actually realize this dream of ours. And, you know, the last year and a half, we did a lot of planning, prepping, fundraising, and we've reached the point where we actually put a down payment on our equipment. So, and actually yesterday, we received a picture from the manufacturers of our custom bright tanks. So,
they look good.
Yeah, we're excited. So, you know, we're going to be putting a 10-barrel brew house at the Craft House. We're going to be brewing, you know, a lot of different specialty beers. We're not subscribing to one particular style. I think we're projected for the first year to do about 40 different beers. And, you know, and the idea is just to kind of go with the flow. You know, we're evolving. Poor Standards, we didn't know where the club would go, and we just kind of went with it. We're passionate about making beer, and Killsboro is going to be our commercial product of that, and we're going to see where it goes.
I think it's worthy of a lot of excitement. From my perspective, as my history, where we used to, I had to brew all the beer that we served at the last place I worked in the city. But in conjunction with the craft house, you're able to supplement that with commercial beer.
Yes.
So you can be Killsboro, have fun, brew the things you want to make, and trust that if there happens to not be something that somebody else might like, that the establishment themselves or the partnership can make that happen. So it's a really beautiful thing that you're going to have a lot of freedom with, and it's going to be really awesome, and I just can't wait to see what sort of inspiration, creativity, and the continuance of your already proven ingenuity is going to produce. So, Sean Torres, thanks for being you, and we look forward to having all of you from Killsboro on Foment About It in the future when we're closer to rolling.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks for being the third brewery in Staten Island, dude.
Yeah, we're excited, and you know, hats off to the other breweries as well, Staten Island Beer Co. and Flagship. You know, it's happening here, so we're happy to be a part of it.
Word up. Cheers. So, Foment right. About It.
Sounds good, man.
My name is Matt McCaleb. I've been a member of Poor Standards now for about 2.5 years. Probably been brewing for about, 3 years. Today I made Candy Ass Cream Ale. It is a cream ale brewed with Lucky Charm cereal. This is part of a beer experiment where we were kind of forced into drawing out of a hat, and I happened to get probably the worst possible outcome of that, Lucky Charm cereal. The beer itself actually turned out pretty good. I know this because I got a couple repeat offenders here drinking the beer, coming back. It's a little high in alcohol, about 7%, so I see them getting a little bit more wobbly each time they come back, but I don't mind that at all. So overall, I think it's a great success. And, you know, thank you for coming by and trying it.
How did you use the Lucky Charms?
So the Lucky Charms is actually put into the mesh. I put an entire box of Lucky Charms, 1 pound, right into the beginning of the mesh, kind of hoping that it would, convert right there, and hopefully I wouldn't be left with all the weird marshmallow flavors.
So I just heard actually from Patrick Wade that there was a rule to this, and all the other interviews didn't include this, but the rule was you weren't allowed to use anything that emoted the cereal except the cereal. So, for example, Cinnamon Crunch, you couldn't use cinnamon to make it taste like it. You had to use the cereal to accent it. I think you did a really good job. You picked a really great base beer to make this beer. It tastes marshmallow, it's fluffy, it is beautiful, and well done, I gotta say.
Thank you very much, and that rule, while I think it's great, I don't think it applies to me because I don't know how it'd make something taste more marshmallowy, but thank you very much.
Hey, what's up? My name's Niall Toner. I'm a brewminary and also a Poor Standards member. I brewed a beer called the Irish Cheerio, which is the Irish goodbye, but I used Honey Nut Cheerios. Substituted Honey Nut Cheerios, a pound of it, for one of my base malts. I thought I'd come out with like a 4 or 5, but there's a ton of sugar in that shit, so it came out at about 5.4. Came out like a decent brown ale, something I would drink, but nothing like Honey Nut Cheerios, so I decided to randle it through Honey Nut Cheerios, and the end product was by far the worst beverage I've ever tasted in my life. It just stripped all the sugar off it and left probably the generic Toastios in the randle or whatever you get there. But super excited about it. It's great, but none of the beers taste like cereal.
Well, he says that, but actually the Irish Cheerio, without going through the randle, tastes freaking delicious. And there is a Cheerio note, but not the same sort of Cheerio note that you get from THP. When sours, haven't had the time they were to do. But it's a delicious beer. You did a great job, and thank you, man.
That was an awesome event to hang, and I wish I could be there for the actual competition because there were more cereal beers that we didn't get a sneak peek in on. So, Mary, I think the meeting is next week. If you want to go to Staten Island, hop on that ferry.
I'm sad. I didn't get to go Saturday. I was under the weather fighting a cold. So I stayed home and slept and hung out on the couch. But, man, it sounded awesome.
It was, Staten it was great.
Island guys are,
and the home musicians killed it.
Great crowd. Also, I got to say, if you're not in New York City, that was a really good collection of New York City accents, which is
no doubt.
Awesome.
No doubt.
It's the kind you hear on TV and movies. These are the real things. All right, so our last segment is a pre-tape from the Boston Fermentation Festival, which we went to, was it last month?
Yes.
Yeah, and awesome. So we have two more.
Well, a little over a month ago. It was late August, August 28th.
Our last two interviews.
Catching up with old friends. You will not hear these voices again. This is Kuzmi and Mary signing out. Thanks for listening to Men About It. But here's Derek Dillinger, Chris Strait.
All right. We're at the Boston Fermentation Festival. Catching up with Chris Strait.
Hello.
Formerly from Brooklyn Kombucha, now with Urban Farm Fermentary.
That's right.
So tell us how it's going.
Well, I pulled into Urban Farm Fermentary in an effort to deal more with ready-to-drink beverages and their fermentation and kind of just seeing the fruits of my labor be more in things that people consume immediately. So I was brought on to do June, which is a honey-based kombucha, as well as kind of start and spearhead with Anna, a food fermentation program.
Awesome.
You know, I've had my eye on Urban Farm for a while just because they make amazing kombucha and amazing products across the board, cider, mead, kombucha, as well as now Gruet.
I just had his Gruet in New York City recently.
Yes.
I don't remember where, but
yeah.
At the Bar Great Harry 9th anniversary.
Absolutely. Yeah, we're getting down to New York City as well, but I was just so blown away by his products for so many years that I really thought it was right for me to move up and get into doing that. So
awesome. So what have you guys been playing with up there so far? What have you gotten your hands into, I guess?
A lot of what we're playing with very recently is fermented food, so especially sauerkraut. Trying to wrap my brain around the intricacies of cucumber pickling, not my favorite food to ferment, but still delicious if you can get it right. The June program is launching, you know, as we speak at Urban Farm, as well as we've been making a lot of tempeh. So that's going to be a big thing. Like, we're really blown away with tempeh, and there's kind of a lack of knowledge as far as tempeh goes, but like, because, you know, when you go to the store and you get that double L brand at Whole Foods or wherever, and it's just like pasteurized tempeh, that kind of thing. And, you know, I've eaten that tempeh. It's not what tempeh tastes like when it's fresh at all. So we're making a lot of that. We're using local Maine beans. So we're reaching out to local bean farmers in Maine to make tempeh from those.
Cool. That's awesome.
From soybeans or from other beans?
Not soybeans, no. So right now we're experimenting. We really like yellow eye. Jacob's Cattle, European Soldier are some of the main ones we're working with right now.
Are these more like heirloom kind of old?
Heirloom,
old
exactly.
School?
Yeah. Okay, so cool. These are beans that have like a story behind them,
yep.
Which is super like riveting for me. Like if we can do that, like we're Urban Farm Fermentary. Like we're trying to get so much of our stuff is sourced locally and used to flavor our products. But if we can get into things that you wouldn't even think about, like we're using local barley in our beers and things like that. So jumping into beans, and if there are, you know, local rice farmers, like, please bring it to me. You can turn that into tempeh as well. So there's really a lot of space to explore, and that's what has always made me so excited about fermentation.
Yeah.
Is there a history of making tempeh with these beans, or are you guys trying a new thing?
As far as I know, zero history. But you can make it from anything that's starchy. So, you know, you can use sweet potatoes or rice or, you know, other legumes like lentils.
So talk a little bit about, talk a little bit what tempeh is for those that don't know.
So you inoculate tempeh with a, what is essentially a mold spore, yeah. So
it's kolgi, isn't it? Or something
Rhizopus similar? Oligosporus is what comes to my mind. And you generally order these spores from Indonesia, which is where I ordered mine from. Once you get it going, you can kind of create your own starter, that kind of thing. But you essentially soak and then cook till they're still kind of al dente as far as, like, beans go. And then you mix them with vinegar as well as these spores, and you let them sit pretty much at 89 degrees in a semi-moist environment. You can put them in a bag and poke holes in the bag. And after 24 to 48 hours, generally my experience, like 24 hours is plenty of time for you to make a nice, you know, very mold congealed bag of tempeh.
This is a healthy mold.
It's absolutely
a
healthy
mold. It's the good kind of
mold. Yeah. It's not the stuff that's, you know, making you feel ill for days and days on end.
Right.
It makes you feel very well, and it hits that protein note that so many fermentations don't necessarily have the ability to do without using meat.
Right. So it has like an umami aspect.
Exactly.
And it has fiber as well.
Exactly.
Which is one
thing,
like,
fiber,
you think
huge.
About, you know, tofu and some other kind of soybean products.
Absolutely.
And tempeh. And also, I feel like tempeh has a really nice texture.
The texture, you know, and, you know, when we'll fry it, like this morning we had chickpea tempeh. And it was, they were already split, and so we fried that up, and it tasted like hash browns.
Yeah.
It's like a new way to have hash browns.
Yeah.
So, very eye-opening. People taste it for the first time, and they're just like, wow, how is this happening? I've never tasted this before. And then, you know, we make our own vinegars at Urban Farm Fermentary. So we're going to start doing, like, you know, we have a vinegar that we've made with oregano, let's say. And so we're using oregano vinegar to start these tempehs.
Oh, my God.
Making our own vinegar, it's really opening our eyes to, like, the ferments, like, the circuity of ferments. Like,
wait, it's, what about the oregano vinegar?
So straight up, we take our mead, we turn it into vinegar, we just let it chill out, essentially. And then we...
Get the Lacinobacter.
Exactly. And then we will take fresh or dried herbs, and we will put them straight in the mead. You can even let that sit for a day. And, like, I just did a b-ball mead the other day. I let it sit for a day, and the b-ball mead vinegar tastes exactly like b-balm.
That's cool.
And then you can use that to flavor your tempeh.
That's
so
awesome.
I'm all kind of about, like, this, like, circuitous way to think about fermentation, which has got me thinking about a number of other things.
That's awesome.
Especially with tempeh. Like, imagine, like, the whole Willy Wonka's thing, you know, where you have a whole pot roast or a whole meal in a piece of candy. Imagine eating a piece of tempeh that tastes like Thanksgiving.
That's
the whole
awesome.
Thing all at once. So that's kind of what we're doing.
I am so glad.
Blueberry.
Yeah, I am so glad that we ran into you.
Yes,
and
me too.
Super exciting that you have joined Eli at Urban Farm Fermentary.
Yeah.
We still haven't been up there, but hopefully we'll get up there one day. Otherwise, I look forward to tasting some of the stuff that comes out. So thank you so much.
Absolutely. Thank you, Mary.
Yeah, cheers.
Cheers.
Barely know what's going on with my brewery.
Hello, and we are at the Boston Fermentation Festival, and we're here to catch up with Derek Dillinger, who was the author of The Fermented Man. We had him on a couple of months ago at this point. And by now, the book has come out. So how are you doing?
I'm holding up. Promoting the book is a little easier so far than living off of fermented food for a year. So I'm getting to do some pretty fun things. I've done a bunch of workshops. I've done some readings now, which actually are... As an author, I'm finding readings are actually the hardest thing to do. Just like standing there, staring at your book, reading it in front of people is like the least natural thing that I've had to do so far. I don't know why. I'm much more comfortable doing workshops and, you know, speaking in front of people than I am just reading off the book. But struggled through, you know, all sorts of promotional events. Fermentation books are cool because you can promote it in so many different ways. And there's so many people interested in it. I've done readings where... A bunch of people showed up, and the proprietor of the bookshop was, like, really surprised. Like, you know, she had no idea who I was. No one knows who I am. I'm a first-time author. Like, I'm not famous. People show up just because fermentation's so in right now. So it's great to see how interested people are really in this right now.
So you mentioned, when we ran into you earlier, you mentioned you just got back from Oregon, right?
Yeah. I've gotten to do some traveling. I was in Asheville for a bit, both for Kent Falls. We were brewing a collab with a brewery down there called Burial. You know, did a little, like, kind of pop-up thing at the brewery to sell my book and talk to people, and there's, like, a fermentation club forming down there. So that was a nice little trip, and then I took myself on a trip to Oregon last week, and I had a bunch of great events out there. I did a reading at Powell's City of Books in Portland, which is an unbelievable, mind-blowing bookstore. And I was on a morning show out there, AM Northwest, which is really fun. And I did a couple of fermentation workshops. Oregon's obviously, you know, an area that's ripe for fermentation right now, and very interested group of people.
Did you get to check out breweries, or what were some of your local? Did you get to check anything out locally?
I did stop, you know, for beers. Honestly, I get so much brewery time in my life that I was really more about the nature and the hiking. I mean, I'm a huge hiker and an avid nature lover, so it was more about driving to mountains while I was out there. But yeah, I mean, there's a ton of breweries, and a lot of breweries making great beer out there. And I did get to drink a good amount of it.
Cool. What was your favorite hike or kind of outdoor area?
My favorite hiking experience was kind of a two-parter where I drove through the Columbia River Gorge, the Hood River Valley, at sunset one night, and it was just staggeringly beautiful. I almost crashed my car the entire hour and a half of driving because just like looking out the window, like in disbelief at how gorgeous it was, pun intended. And then the next morning, I drove to Trillium Lake below Mount Hood at sunrise, and just watched the sunrise over the mountains. The mountains out there are so prominent compared to the mountains we have here out east.
The real mountains. We have like heroic, old mountains.
Our mountains
here
are much older, millions and millions of years older, which is really cool to know in itself, but less dramatic when you're taking pictures of it. So just those prominent volcanic mountains out there, unbelievable.
So what fermentation workshops did you give?
So I did one at People's Co-op out there, and at a kind of hobby farm a little bit outside of the city. I did a few weeks ago a fermentation workshop at Brooklyn Grange, actually, in Brooklyn, largest rooftop farm in the world. Awesome space if you haven't been there. And that went really well. I mean, we sold out the workshop actually before any of us had started promoting it, even. Again, just based on fermentation being so, you know, so in right now. And we're, I think, planning to do some more in the winter.
With Brooklyn Grange,
yeah. So,
we'll
yeah.
To keep our listeners updated on those.
For sure, yeah. I mean, they've been really exciting to do. People are really interested. It's always a great crowd of people with a lot of questions. So it's the workshops, I find, are kind of the best types of event.
What sections from your book have you been reading?
That's a debate that I've been kind of trying to figure out. Yeah. I read the chapter that was like kind of about me trying to figure out what my diet was now, because I thought that was a good encapsulation of like kind of what I was eating. People always ask, like, what did you actually eat? And that explained that, and also that just got into the challenges of the diet in the year. And then at Pals in Portland, I read the Rotten Shark Meat chapter, my trip to Iceland, which, you know, has some good comedy in the extreme ends of fermentation. So I thought that was, you know, a more entertaining type selection.
Awesome. So people can get your book at bookstores and online?
Wherever books are sold, hopefully. Yes. I mean,
and if it's not, you should ask for it.
You can ask for it. I mean, can't guarantee that every independent bookstore in the country has it, but it's an Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and pretty much all the independent bookstores that I've been to. So,
want to say what it's called one more time?
It is called The Fermented Man by Derek Dellinger. Look for it. Ask for it. Hopefully enjoy it.
Yeah, it's very...
It's a narrative... It's just a narrative story about
it's a very natural
beer.
It's meant
like
to be
novel.
Right, it's meant to be both entertaining and informative rather than just kind of a cookbook, so I wanted to have a story to tell along with introducing people to fermentation.
Cool. Well, thank you so much for talking to us, and we look
thanks
forward
for
to
catching
seeing
up.
You in Brooklyn sometime.
Excellent.
So, cheers.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening. Banks of forgiveness.
business. You clutch to your burden. Her water's a baby.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Alweli, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.